You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, November 9th, 2017.
So the average incarceration is anywhere from 5 to 6 months for females.
Ah.
She was incarcerated for multiple years, so her crime was significant.
Teresa Ochoa is the founder of HOPE, an organization that pairs juvenile delinquents with college students who help them prepare for the world after incarceration and pubescence. Ochoa speaks with WFHB correspondent Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks Indiana University students their thoughts about the IU Foundation offshoring millions of dollars in assets in the Cayman Islands. But first, these local headlines.
Around 200 protesters, scientists, and environmental activists gathered this morning in Yellowwood State Park in Brown County. The protesters opposed the auction of 299 acres of Yellowwood's backcountry by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources at a forester's office at 9 a.m. this morning. Although the DNR estimated the value of the 1,700 old-growth trees to be approximately $150,000, the winning bid purchased a timber contract for $108,000. Conservation Director with the Indiana Forest Alliance, Dr. Ray Schnapp, spoke with WFHB this morning from the Save Yellowwood encampment. Dr. Schnapp says environmental groups made their own bid during the timber auction this morning in an attempt to save the forest.
The highest bid they received was about 108, and except that we did hand a piece of paper that was offering $150,000 to leave the timber standing, but they did not consider that. They wouldn't accept it because we're not licensed timber buyers.
The Save Yellowwood encampment has been situated on Dave Shoopman's land. Shoopman said he and his neighbors have signed a petition disallowing logging trucks from using the last quarter mile of their private road.
It's the last half mile of at the top of Possum Trot Road. Possum Trot Road is 2.5 miles long. There's a homeowners association at the top of Possum Trot Road, and that's what I'm a member of, and that's the section of the road that we have the ability to block off.
Last week, a group of 228 scientists signed a petition sent to Governor Eric Holcomb's office asking him to halt the logging of Yellowwood. The last letter was authored by Earlham College Professor Emeritus Leslie Bishop. It states that in 2002, over 40% of Indiana's state forests were exempted from commercial logging. In 2017, a letter alleges that less than 5% was exempt. The letter details wildlife that are dependent on old-growth forests in Indiana, including the endangered Indiana bat, which was recently confirmed to inhabit the Yellowwood backcountry area by a team of independent scientists and ecologists. Our complete coverage of the logging in Yellowwood is available at WFHB.org.
Governor Holcomb released his office's agenda yesterday morning. The proposed Next Level Agenda 2018 signals a change of pace in the governor's response to the ongoing opioid crisis in Indiana. Whereas the 2017 Next Level Agenda included support to expand local authority to establish needle exchange programs, next year's agenda makes no mention of the needle exchanges. The governor's press release states his office will encourage legislation to, quote, strengthen enforcement efforts by establishing felony charges for drug-induced homicide and a felony murder charge for those who illicitly manufacture drugs that result in drug-induced death, unquote. That means that those who do deal drugs to people who die from overdoses could be leveled with homicide charges. The Indiana Recovery Alliance director and founder Chris Albert says punitive approaches against drug dealers rarely work.
The idea of homicide murder charges being brought against people for what's called homicide-induced overdose has no evidence as a deterrent. So the prosecutors want to use these kind of laws in hopes that they will deter people from selling, and typically they talk about them in terms of large-scale dealers, and we're going to go after these dealers. In reality, what happens is that people who are most likely to respond to an overdose call for help in that overdose and then are charged with those type of murder charges.
The Indiana Association of Prosecuting Attorneys issued a statement yesterday praising Governor Holcomb's change of stance on combating the opioid crisis. That statement reads in part, quote, "The opioid crisis needs this type of multifaceted approach that gives or includes giving crime-fighting tools to prosecutors and law enforcement, monitors drug use, and provides treatment. Working together is the only way to effectively fight against the societal menace," unquote.
Habitat for Humanity of Monroe County may breathe life into the former RCA Thompson property, which has remained uninhabited for over a decade. The Monroe County Commissioner signed a letter of intent with the Habitat yesterday, allowing the nonprofit to explore the possibility of developing an affordable housing project on the site. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell told commissioners it was the Habitat who approached the county with its vision.
This letter of intent essentially allows them to explore those possibilities. It gives them some assurances that we're not going to sell it to a third party without giving them the ability to come forth and say yes, but it doesn't. It's only the first step in the process. There's much more to the process. This does not bind the county in any way to transfer the property, but it allows the process to come through and see what the possibilities for use there is.
The county has owned the South Rogers Street property for more than a decade and entertained various uses for it. The county's Environmental Commission last February considered developing an agroforestry project on the property. More recently, it was flagged for a jail. This week, Habitat for Humanity CEO Daryl Nehrer described a vision of using the property for a 350-unit affordable housing development.
When you see the transformation from a jail facility to a true integrated mixed income affordable housing community, something unlike anything that this community has, which exists very few places across the United States, we have the opportunity to lead.
Nehrer says this new affordable housing initiative could have a wide-reaching effect.
And this isn't just about affordable housing. I've talked to a number of people who are involved in economic development, who are leaders within corporations in our community, who say this is something that's needed for them because they can point to it and say, when they're recruiting talent, they can say this is the forethought and vision that the leadership of Monroe County has. They can point to it and say, this is where our employees who are working at the lower end of the income spectrum can actually progress through great, affordable, decent housing.
Anti-poverty and homelessness advocates have promoted a so-called housing-first approach since the 1980s, where stable housing becomes the basis for which individuals can address a variety of issues that contribute to their poverty and instability. Commissioner Amanda Barge, who is a professional therapist, said Habitat's vision could mean a chance for the county to lead by example.
The idea that you said it, that this was earmarked for a jail, and the idea that now housing first, we know that's what works, right? And if not just when it comes to the emotional attachment to housing, but the science behind when someone has a place to live, they can build and they can get their lives back together. And so that to me is huge. And we are leaders in the country. If we do this, we're leaders in the country in terms of recognizing what works.
Commissioner Patrick Stoffers told fellow commissioners the housing project could end up being the best thing they ever do. In other news, the Monroe County Youth Services Bureau and the county's highway garage will be solar-powered by next year. The Monroe County commissioners approved an agreement with Bloomington-based MPI Solar for the solar installation of their November 8th meeting. Commissioner Julie Thomas noted the county needs to have the solar panels installed by the end of the year in order to take full advantage of the net metering. Earlier this year, Governor Eric Holcomb signed Senate Bill 309 into law, which curtails net metering. The new law decreases the financial credit for renewable energy users pay to sell excess energy back to utility grid. In order to get full metering rate, solar installations must be in place by December 31st. County Attorney Jeff Cockrell said the county is looking to MPI Solar to move forward quickly.
They were the only respondent who indicated that they could accomplish the goal by the end of the year, and they were also had a base price, and this is for 30 kilowatts at the YSB and 100 kilowatts at the Highway Garage. They had a price of $267,000, and the other respondent had a price of $428,000 at those facilities.
Cockrell said if the company does not complete the work on time, the county can impose a fine of 10% of the project cost. He says the fine is roughly equivalent to 5 years' loss of net metering credits. The county commissioner's next meeting is scheduled for November 22nd at 10 a.m. All Monroe County offices will be closed on Friday, November 10th, in observance of Veterans Day.
The City of Bloomington Police Department is planning on adding 3 to 5 new surveillance cameras in downtown Bloomington. The purchase of the new cameras is being paid for by a grant awarded to the BPBD. The location for the cameras has yet to be determined, but will most likely be in high-trafficked pedestrian areas. The Bloomington Police are reportedly considering installing the cameras at Seminary Square, People's Park, Kirkwood Avenue, and the Beeline Trail. The cameras will be movable, however, so authorities can relocate them to new areas if need be. The BPBD already has 6 other surveillance cameras in the downtown area. Those cameras were installed in city parks last year in a push from Mayor John Hamilton's office. The Bloomington Police Department reportedly has $21,600 in grant money to spend on the cameras, which are estimated to cost about $6,000 each. The cameras will operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and will store their recordings in a centralized database for 30 days as per Indiana state law. The Sheriff's Department also received $6,000 from the grant, which will be used to purchase tire deflation spikes to be used during vehicle pursuits. The Bloomington Police Department could not be reached for comment on this story. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograff and Bean Neoff. Slotograff Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotograflegal.com. Slotograff Niehoff, law for business, community, and life.
Teresa Ochoa considers herself lucky. She gets to work with imprisoned kids, some of whom are well on their way to becoming hardened criminals. She's an associate professor of special education at Indiana University and has founded HOPE, a program matching undergraduate college students as mentors with kids serving time in the state's 3 juvenile correction facilities. Ochoa leads the group of volunteers who strive to teach the kids how to walk and talk in the adult world and hopefully to get jobs that will keep them on the straight and narrow. Ochoa joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week in the studio, Teresa Ochoa. Teresa, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Now, HOPE attempts to get juvenile offenders ready for life after incarceration. Now, how does HOPE work?
The first thing we do is connect a juvenile offender with an undergraduate mentor. Mm-hmm. And so Sarah Swank, who is the juvenile director of the mentoring aspect of HOPE, is the one responsible for recruiting and training and connecting or matching the juvenile to the undergraduate mentor. Then that undergraduate mentor travels to one of the juvenile facilities on a weekly basis, and they work with the juvenile in the facility. They fill out job applications. They explore careers. They talk about life. And the end goal of this mentoring is that the undergraduate mentor serves as a positive role model that the juvenile can emulate.
These kids who are in the facilities, they probably have never thought about these things.
It's really interesting because the majority of them have not. Or if they have thought about what they want to be, it tends to be rather unrealistic. So, for example, some of them, when asked, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
They want to be actors and actresses.
Right.
They want to be astronauts. They want to be doctors. So they have big dreams, but the majority of them are unrealistic. And so the idea that when they are released, they're going to be able to find employment is rather vague for them, because they go from having large, unattainable dreams to not being able to do much because they don't know how to fill out a job application.
Right. Is it voluntary for the kids to work with you, or are they made to work with you?
It is completely voluntary. This is where my hope for humanity goes way, way up high. So the undergraduate students who volunteer from IU go down, drive their cars, they get no course credit, they get no hourly payment. In fact, they pay for their own gas, and sometimes they even volunteer to do extra things that need to be done. So they go out of the goodness of their heart. They are committed undergraduates who want to make a positive change in the lives of these kids. Oh, man, you know what?
Yeah.
Sarah Swank. Sarah has been with Hope from her freshman year. Mm. She graduated 4 years later, and instead of just going to get a job, I don't have funding for this program. She gave me her gap year. My goal is that within 5 years, I will train one undergraduate mentor for every single juvenile who is in confinement. The count as of a few months ago was 441 students. And so the goal for 5 years is to have 441 undergraduates that will be traveling to wherever those kids
are.
So
is that a total for the state? 441?
It is.
And there have been success stories.
Lots of success stories, yes.
In other words, getting a job, going to school. I saw one success story where the young woman got married.
Yes.
And was going to college.
Yes. Yes.
That's a success.
That was one of our first success stories. And our most current success story is a young woman who was incarcerated for an extended period of time. So the average incarceration is anywhere from 5 to 6 months for females.
Ah.
She was incarcerated for multiple years. So her crime was significant.
She got into really hot water. And this might be the kind of person where you say, uh-oh, wash our hands.
Absolutely.
This is a loser.
Yes.
Some people might say that.
Yes, absolutely.
You didn't.
I couldn't. I saw that for the kids who stay in confinement the longest, those are the kids who need hope the most, our services. And so we were patient. And we were persistent in asking for her to join the program. She eventually was given the permission to join the program. What we do is we work closely with the facilities, and when we ask them for referrals, look, we want to be respectful of their criteria for selecting or giving us the students. And so we encourage them to give us their most troubled, the most challenging. But I think that there's always a reservation that they are being matched with undergraduates. And so I think out of the concern for our undergrads, they wanted to give us the kids they thought could benefit the most.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that meant giving us the ones with the lower crimes or the better behaved. And I see that there's benefit in that. But truthfully, if the goal is to match every single kid with their own mentor, then sooner or later, we're going to have to work with any kid.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, we need to provide services for all of them, regardless of our own belief for rehabilitation. In my mind, I don't want to make limitations that could potentially be artificial. We don't know who's going to benefit, but why don't we shoot that everyone is going to have an opportunity to benefit?
Are all the kids who are in juvenile facilities victims of a disorder, quote unquote, or are some of them, again, quote unquote, bad kids?
Here is the good news about the current research on brain development.
Okay.
We don't have enough information to determine whether some kids are just born that way and that's it, that nothing is going to change them. Mm-hmm. Now,
we're talking violence and antisocial behavior and so forth.
Correct, correct. The brain of kids is still malleable. Mm-hmm. There's still very much the possibility that with the right intervention, all of these callous, unemotional traits, that is the signature characteristic, is still not so solidified that there is no hope for them.
Anybody who wants more information can go to hopementoring.com. Teresa, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you for having me.
This and other episodes of Big Talk are available on WFHB's website at wfhb.org or online at electronpencil.com.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next is our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, is investing in offshore accounts acceptable for IU? University endowment earnings are usually tax exempt. However, depending on the type of investment, even universities can be required to pay federal taxes. Investing through so-called blocker corporations, which are established in no-tax or low-tax jurisdictions like the Cayman Islands, literally blocks the university from having to pay taxes. IU and many other universities utilize blocker corporations to maximize the return on their investments. The practice is legal, but supports a system that is often used to hide money or exactly how it is invested. We have asked, how do you feel about IU investing in offshore accounts?
I mean, my opinion is you can't blame a company for trying to optimize its money. They need to, like, close the legal loopholes, basically. I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, you can blame them a little bit for not being super ethical, but not too much.
Yeah, I mean, even though it seems legal, it doesn't necessarily seem like it might be moral, which I guess that's up to IU and whoever determines their funding and their trustees and where that money's coming from. But it definitely seems like it can go to a lot better places, like scholarships or like restoring the campus and putting more into classes. But I don't know.
I don't really have any opinion on it, but if it helps IU, then I would support it.
I'd say I don't because I haven't done any research myself, so I'd have to look at it to actually make an actual opinion on it.
Benefit of the students here, instead of just keeping the money and hoarding it.
I want to know, like, why they're doing it, I guess.
But like, other than that, like if it's the school's money, it should go towards the school, not just be stored away in a foreign country.
I haven't heard like anything about that yet, but in my personal opinion, just with things that I've kind of been dealing with recently, I wouldn't be surprised if IU is keeping, you know, like various things from us in terms of finances or like business ventures or whatever. Any, I think, like entity that has both like the private and public, like, you know, could go that way. So, but yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know.
You know, just because something's legal, I guess, doesn't necessarily mean that it's ethical and that they should be doing that. And they should, you know, maybe strive to go above and beyond like just what's legal and maybe consider not doing that anymore.
Do you think that affects you as a student?
Maybe not directly, but like indirectly, I'm sure, you know, there's definitely probably impacts of it. Just, you know, with the amount that we have to pay to go here and stuff. Definitely. I feel like if it's legal, it's something that's okay, honestly. If people figure out that is something that they want to do and that's something that they're doing with their money, it's not my choice to comment on what people do with their own lives. I think as a student, their job is to provide me with the best education, and that, as far as I'm concerned, so far they are doing that and they are doing an amazing job. And if that's how they choose to use their funds, the extra ones that they have, it's not my business.
I guess I don't know enough about it to really form an opinion. I don't know enough about finance, I guess. That's curious. I didn't know that. And I, you know, I guess I would like to see, you know, understand why all the way down there, but that's all. I guess I don't know enough about it.
I actually didn't know they were doing this, so it kind of annoys me that even though there's a lot of things that need to be repaired on campus, they're keeping it offshore, and I don't get why they're doing this.
Well, I mean, if they made the money, then I guess they deserve to keep it for themselves, or maybe, I don't know, spend it on more stuff for IU.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jonah Chester and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Barbara Von Pervosky. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Using your favorite podcasting app, you can have this show delivered to you directly. Just search for WFHB Daily Local News and subscribe to our podcast.
And stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.